What do you get when you have one voiceover girl?
And me? That makes two voiceover girls.
Oh, okay. What do you get when you have two voiceover girls separated by one pond and two perspectives?
Oh, I know. You get the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast.
That's right. Let's listen to Romy and Jessica as they share their journey into the voiceover industry.
Hello, welcome to the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast. I'm Jessica Matheson.
Hi, I'm Romy Santosh. So, Jessica, who are we going to be speaking to today?
It looks like today we are talking with Chris Tester, a voice actor from the UK, about what a day in the life of a voice actor looks like.
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, let's have a listen. Chris, tell us a little bit about your VO journey.
Sure, of course. I graduated from drama school back in 2008. And like most actors, I was aware that voiceover work was available and that maybe I might be suitable for some of it. But other than that, really had no idea how to get started. And I got the occasional gig through my acting agent at the time, normally for things like video games and stuff, because they require actors with a capital A, apparently. But that was really about it until 2017, where I realized that it was actually potentially viable to record from home. And so did some experimenting, as we all do, with, you know, a relatively cheap Rode mic and an improvised setup and a Focusrite preamp, because everybody seems to start with something like that, and started auditioning on pay-to-plays. And actually booked a few jobs, which was surprising in the extreme. And then I've kind of been working from then on. And I quite quickly kind of like gravitated to being a voiceover full time, not because I was making a ton of money and being incredibly successful, though if anybody asks, obviously that is the case. But between you both and your listeners, I mean, that was mainly to do with the fact that my resting acting work was zero contract work. So there was no guaranteed hours. And what income there was wasn't incredibly well paid. So it didn't take me to hit much in order to be able to supplant it with voiceover income. So within 6 months, I was doing that. And then I've been full time pretty much since the beginning of 2017 onwards. And that's been doing a combination of a little bit of pay to plays, but not so much now really at all. Mainly on freelancing sites and direct marketing, my two kind of like key priorities. So it's been that, and then it's also been kind of content creation, because I have a YouTube channel, which is mainly aimed at voice actors more than the clients, but I do try and create a lot of client-centric content as well and cross-purpose. Yeah, so juggling all of those things, as we tend to do all of the time. And that's what has got me to my padded cell here, which is nice after a few years of, improvised setups in hallways and moving blankets and all of that kind of fun and stress. I was able to move into a house as opposed to a flat with my wife 2 years ago and properly kind of like have a studio built. Which obviously, again, frees me up to do more work because I'm not concerned about the lawnmowers outside so much or the room treatment or all of that kind of stuff. And especially video games is still definitely a huge part, not the biggest part, but a huge part of the kind of stuff that I do. So being able to have a room to throw around in, I've literally been set on fire today, metaphorically, for the purposes of a video game. So being able to do that in a room as opposed to in a mountain of bedsheets is always useful. So that's kind of where I've been got up to at this point.
Wow. So that setup that you have there, is that one room and you can work in that room and voice in that room? Or do you have like a separate place where you go to voice?
So it is all just one room. So it's a standalone room which has a raised floor to make sure that, you know, any vibrations don't affect, that they don't travel upwards. And then I've got a stud wall. So basically, I got a studio builder rather than trying to do it myself. It would have been much cheaper to do it myself, but I didn't trust myself to do it or to tell someone how to do it. I used a company called Miloco, who are based in the UK, and they this is what they specialize in. And so they created a kind of like a stud wall. So it's kind of like an interior wall as well from the outside with acoustic glass, which means that I've got daylight, which is crucial for me, kind of mental health wise, after 3 or 4 years in the dark, which is, you know, necessary. It seems to be a baptism of some sort for, you know, voicing from home. So that was always fun. So yeah, having natural light and having space were my key priorities. And then what Moloco also do is that they kind of, they take a look at the space and then they kind of like pass all of the details on to an acoustician and they kind of like work out specifically how to best treat your space. So I've got these kind of like these sound blocks. I've got three in front of me here, three on the ceiling, two behind me, one on that wall, one on that wall as well. So it's completely acoustically treated. I had to kind of like get used to it because it still does sound live, a little bit liver, a little bit brighter being in a room as opposed to it's completely dead. Because I have literally stuffed whatever I could find, usually including my actual bed, you know, on top of me and everything in order to deaden the sound. So that did take some kind of like mental recalibration, but Moloco knew what they were doing. So I kind of like deferred responsibility and outsourced all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, so I've had this for just over a year. And as I said, it's hardwired into the internet. So in terms of being able to do, you know, all of the remote direction and not kind of clench my butt every time someone says Source Connect, I go, yeah, of course. Let me just see about that again. Sorry. So that's always good. And yeah, so it's completely soundproof and works for me.
Sounds
wow,
amazing.
It sounds amazing. Yeah, I think that would work for anybody. So.
Yeah, I mean, I literally saw, there's a voiceover artist who's also a comedian and impressionist called Darren Altman. And if you Google Darren Altman home studio, he basically had a version of this produced by them. I watched that and was like, that's straight on the bucket list. That's exactly what I want. In a slightly different color scheme, but that's exactly what I want, essentially. Mm. Yeah, just in terms of being able to, it means that I can, if I, you know, for longer scripts, I can sit down and narrate like this as I'm talking to you now, and that's fine. But this is completely movable, so I can stand up and do all of that, and it's very kind of like flexible depending on what my own energy levels are and what the kind of like the project demands and all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, I'm not, you know, panicking at any time, you know, there's building work or anything else going on by my neighbors or anything like that. So yeah, happy days.
Brilliant, sounds great. So we'd like to know a little bit more about what a typical day looks like for you. So is there a kind of a typical day that you could share with us and inspire us with?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I like to evoke the image of, I don't know if you're familiar with DuckTales, Scrooge McDuck, but the bit where he kind of like dives into his vault of money and then swims in it. I mean, that's normally how I start my day. I just cover myself in the previous day's wealth. I like to get out all of my cash. It's also very good for sound treatment, apparently. But after I've done that, in terms of the typical voiceover day for me, obviously there is no typical day, but hopefully there's something that I've got to record. So that needs factoring in. And then everything else is in terms of, well, it's generally, if you're not recording, then you should probably be marketing, I would say, in some way, a way, shape or form, whether or not that's content creation, whether or not that's direct emails, direct video messages, anything like that. And then there's obviously kind of like correspondence with clients and all of that needs kind of juggling. So I kind of go through two processes. I do kind of like, I have a list using a particular app, which is my very much my to-do list, which I then prioritize. But then the next stage on from that is really to time block. So I'm very much a kind of Google Calendar type of person. So what I will then do is like, I will look at my list and see what, be able to move it because it's digital, you know, I can drag up to the top what should be the priority. And generally what I tend to do is at the on a Sunday evening, or if not on a Friday night, shows how fun I am, I try and kind of plot roughly what the next week is going to be, with the kind of caveat asterisk that I know that everything is going to completely change. I know that because life happens. Regardless of voiceover work, life happens. But it gives me the illusion of control, which means that I'm less panicky during the weekend when I'm trying to stay away from the studio as much as possible and create some healthy work-life boundaries, which is easier said than done, but we can all aspire to it at the very least. So what I do then is that after I've got that list and I've kind of prioritized it, what is the thing that I need to get done this week, if nothing else? And then I will literally assign blocks for the entire week. I will keep some space free because I know some projects will take longer than others. Some may take shorter and all of this kind of stuff. So it's completely fluid. But I find the act of physically assigning time in a block to every single task that I'm going to do. And that includes daily tasks of, you know, if I'm going to do direct marketing for an hour each day, which sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, then I will kind of like copy and paste an hour into every day. And then as a, you know, a natural day kind of like occurs as a result, obviously things run longer, things run shorter. And what I can do is I can see, because all of the priorities, all of the must-dos on my list that I can legitimately do during that week are in my kind of weekly planner, I can move it around. So it's kind of like, oh, if that session actually ran longer, then that half an hour or 20 minutes of content creation or whatever, that needs to go somewhere else. If that's later today, or if that's Wednesday, or if that's Friday, so be it. And if I get to the end of the week and I've got loads of little blocks left to do in an impractical amount of time because it's 5:30 on a Friday night and my whiskey is calling me, then what I'll do is that's when I kind of like in terms of systemizing it, is that I'll go back to that to-do list, make sure that those little blocks are kind of represented on that to-do list still. And I start the process all over again, essentially. So I do things like color coding the blocks, obviously, as well, and things like that. Not so much in kind of like red is the most priority, because if you cover your entire calendar with red blocks, to me, it just makes me feel nervous and anxious and aware of what I'm not doing or whatever. So what I try and do is calming colors, but a variety of different colors. So at a quick glance, you know, you can kind of like batch tasks. So if I'm going to be spending an entire afternoon in front of the computer typing, then similar tasks to that, I might want to group together. Similarly, recordings. If I want to get in a recording and performance frame of mind, I find that helpful to do as well, because otherwise it's the flitting from one thing to another. Sometimes that's useful. Sometimes that's creative, but sometimes that's distracting. And sometimes it means that I actually spend a couple of minutes getting into that different type of task. Get, you know, I've got to, okay, I've got my, I'm doing my emailing. So I need to have this window open. And then I've got to kind of get into the rhythm of it. And then to kind of pull myself out of that and then go, okay, now I've got to record. And then I'm going to go back to the emailing. You know, that's sometimes necessary, but I try and avoid it when possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. It can really change things. I notice, well, like yesterday, for instance, it happened to be just I had some things that I needed to record, and I needed to record some stuff with my I've had a carton of cigarettes and a pot of coffee voice. And so yes, that's what I did. And as I did that, oddly enough, my voice warmed up. Yeah. So I was ready to record my other stuff. And I had this huge block of time where it made sense to record and not stop and do the administrative tasks that I needed to. So how do you prioritize? How do you determine where things go? I mean, obviously you talked about blocking and different things like that, but is there a method where you kind of evaluate what you have to do? And
yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's all, I mean, in terms of, I mean, keeping everything trackable is most important. How can you keep track of stuff? But you need to, because that's how you're going to be evaluating how you're progressing. There's no point in going like, oh, well, I had X number of jobs in this week, but only Y number of jobs the next week. If your main source of getting jobs is auditions, but you did a hugely vast different number of auditions. Strangely, I've booked less work, but I only did 5 auditions this week as opposed to 500. I think there are certain kind of metrics that you want to track. I mean, like, I don't do pay-to-play auditions, really, as I said, anymore. So I don't necessarily have an audition tallying quite that way. But, you know, whatever you're doing, if it's kind of how many pieces of content am I creating? How many, you know, things am I recording? How many emails or video messages am I sending out? You know how long it's going to take you to do that, to do 5 a day or 10 a day or 1 a day or whatever. So it's kind of, that's the way of trying to keep yourself accountable in terms of what are those kind of, these are the tasks that I need to continually do in order to hit these targets that I need to hit. And obviously if a doctor's appointment or, you know, real life kind of like comes in and completely takes out a day or 2 or 3, so be it, that's fine. And I think that's the other crux, is to not beat yourself up about the fact that sometimes life gets in the way and you can't always hit those numbers. But to be able to go like, there's something about the physical act with the time blocking of okay, if I can't do this email marketing now when I'm supposed to, I've got to move that block somewhere. You know what I mean? I've got to move it to somewhere else. I can't just delete it. Oh, I mean, I can, but you know, that kind of slightly defeats the point. So if, you know, it means that I actively have to go, I've got to put this somewhere. And therefore, do I need to reprioritize anything else? You know, we all have these expanding to-do lists, and, you know, some are daily to-dos, weekly to-dos, monthly to-dos, yearly to-dos. And I'm always kind of like trying to reverse engineer that, you know, in terms of like, what's my year goals? Okay. And then we break it. How do you eat the elephant? So you kind of like breaking it up into all of these manageable tasks, what these manageable tasks are. And so that is my kind of like priorities in terms of making sure that I'm doing a little bit of each thing at a time when it makes sense to do so. I mean, some of those weeks I'm not doing any marketing whatsoever because I'm flat out recording. Okay, great. Happy days. And sometimes vice versa. Sometimes I'm just doing marketing and I'm not doing recording. So I think it's that mindset. You've got to be honest about what your real priorities are, as opposed to the ones that you maybe dream up at the beginning of the year saying, yeah, I think that'd be a great idea. And then you get to 2 or 3 months in, or, you know, we're just at the end of the first quarter of 2022 now, and you actually realize, why have I not started that at all? And it's either because you've forgotten about it, which the to-do list should hopefully eliminate that risk, or alternatively, it's because it doesn't matter.
Right.
And that can be quite a freeing thing, I think, for me, to kind of go like, oh, I got this because I think I saw somebody else get this. Mm-hmm. And we all get that kind of jealousy comparison kind of thing. I'll steal that. That sounds like a really cool thing. I quite like that. My ego would like that. So, but it's actually in the evaluation process that you go, actually, it doesn't matter to me that much, or it's not suitable. It's not applicable to me. If my main thing is about like earning a certain amount, then I know what my metrics are, quote unquote, in terms of number of leads turning into a number of prospects, turning into a number of clients. I know what that rough ratio is because I've been doing it full time for long enough that I know what that ratio is. Now it's a question of, how do I apply that every week? I know how long it takes me to send 5 emails. So that's a time amount. And then I kind of like proportion it. But the first I do is kind of like, it's that kind of, I don't know, it. There's a book called The Second Brain, which is all about, and, you know, there's also the book Getting Things Done, obviously. The Second Brain is basically, partly is about the fact that we can't retain all of the knowledge that we need to in our brains all of the time. It's just literally impossible. So you need to have a notation system so that everything, as soon as you think of something, I write it down. I either write it down, you know, physically with a pen, because I still can do that, or alternatively, I do it on my phone on this app, which is also connected to my computer, so that it's there. As soon as I get a fleeting idea, or even if it's a fleeting idea for an Instagram reel or something like that, I'll put it down there in the right kind of place. So I know it's there and it exists. It doesn't mean that I have to action it now, but I can get to it when I need to get to it. And then it means that once that's kind of what people would call the collecting, you collect all of the information first, all of the different ideas that you have, then you review it, and then it's about the actioning. So you prioritize and then you action. And I think going through that process of like my Friday afternoon, because work tends to be quite slow because everybody's wrapping up for the weekend. I mean, sometimes people are pushed for deadlines, but normally there's a good hour there. And I always have a clear hour on a Friday afternoon where my whole role is just getting my act together. You know, in terms of doing that, in terms of what's all of the information that I've collected up to this date, what is the thing that is a real push priority for this next coming week that I want to do? And then how can I implement it into my time planning for the week?
Wow, that's amazing. You've obviously been quite thorough in everything that you've said. Is there any other advice or anything else that you would give to somebody who's new, just joining in the voiceover industry and feeling that they can't get everything done or they're having a hard time with everything? Anything else?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that they're not alone, and to reassure them about that. You know, just because I give off the illusion of knowing what I'm doing doesn't mean that I necessarily do half the time. I think I'm panicking just as much with imposter syndrome as anybody. So that's, you know, admit that. I think first and foremost. And then I think it's kind of making informed decisions as possible. I think when starting out, especially, we get overwhelmed about what should I be doing and what makes most sense for me to do. And we start doing one thing and then we go, oh, well, actually, maybe I should be doing more social media stuff and not this direct marketing, or maybe I should be doing more pay to play auditions and not doing, you know, something else, you know, all of these kind of things. So there's all these, competing strands. And what I would really say, that there are two things I'd say. The first one is that I think you should give everything a shot and a sustained shot at that. And I think have that clarity of thought about, you know, do the one thing. Even apply that in terms of trying things out. It's like try pay to plays for a sustained period of time and really sit in the reality of what's that like and see what your return is on that, but also see how that makes you feel, because it may be right for some people and it may not be right for so many other people as well. Similarly with direct marketing. Whatever that means to you, by the way, if that's email or video messages or, you know, any kind of like variety of that, is that try it for a sustained period. So obviously, see what the results are going to be like and see if there's any traction or any movement forward or anything else like that. But see if you enjoy it as well, because I think that ends up being a kind of like a tipping point. And I think it's only when you do those things for a sustained period of time, so you properly commit and just do that one thing for a month, I'd say, as a minimum, that you can then kind of take a step back and assess and go like, okay, how does A compare to B? And how did that make me feel? And then, because we've all got that fear of missing out, it's like, oh, I should be on social media, shouldn't I? Shouldn't I? I don't know. The answer is no, you don't need to be by any stretch of the imagination. We've all got these things in our pockets, you know, which takes too much of our time. And we know it does, mm-hmm. because they're, you know, designed that way. And we all kind of like have a love-hate relationship because of that. Yes, there are voice actors out there who can channel and use social media in a fantastic way to aid their business. But there are even more of them out there who are kind of spending time on social media, not quite really sure what there is that they're doing or what the aim is. When they could just literally just be getting on and sending some direct emails and getting some money in the door in a different way. So I think that really is kind of like the key point, the key kind of like takeaway. And the other thing is just to kind of like see if you can see when starting out, in terms of just thinking, because you've got to try and get into the client-centric, much as I hate that phrase, much as that's such a marketing phrase. Mm-hmm. But you need to think like your customers, whoever they may be. And I think an important thing to be aware is of your own process in terms of ordering stuff, buying shit. When you buy shit, not literally, hopefully, I mean, whatever's your bag, but anyway, when you do it, what kind of process do you go through? What are you looking for? What do you check? Are you someone who looks for loads of social proof on social media? Do you Google it? Do you go to certain providers? Do you go to certain websites? That kind of thing. Because that will give you a heads up on what the vast majority of voiceover purchasers are doing. Increasingly with the kind of upcoming generation who are now becoming video producers or whatever, who are, I'd imagine, a bit younger than me when starting out. A lot of them tend to want to go direct to source. They hate the middlemen. They hate working, mm-hmm. you know, around and about because they think it's too expensive, you know, and they can't deal direct with the person that they need to. And that's one way that, you know, social media can be a great equalizer in many kind of like ways. But, you know, it's why social proof is so important and that kind of thing. So having a consciousness of how you consume stuff will hopefully give you a kind of like a lead in on how other people might consume, you know, what you're offering. So I think that would be the priority, is kind of like to be conscious of your consumption and to try not to panic and give things time. To kind of like focus on the one thing rather than the scattergun approach would be my main recommendations and takeaway.
Helpful stuff. Real quick, how do people get a hold of you?
You can Google Naturally RP voiceover because it's received pronunciation, or my name, Chris Tester. Hopefully, if my website is doing what it's supposed to do, then you can find me very easily from there.
Well, that was an amazing interview with Chris Tester. He had so many strategies to share with us. I thought that was brilliant. Arranging the day and making the best of it and organizing work. I'm certainly going to take a few things away from it. What about you, Jessica?
I agree. He had a lot of good tips and tricks and, like you said, strategies. And I think not only will I take something away from it, but I bet our listeners will too.
Absolutely. And that's the end of another fabulous episode.
Yes.
And look forward to the next one.
So don't forget to like, subscribe, and share our podcast with your friends, your colleagues, your neighbors, complete strangers, share it with everyone. And if you're interested in joining our Facebook group, you can find us there at facebook.com/groups/voiceovergirlsacrossthepond. Until next time, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for the VoiceOver Girls Across the Pond podcast. This is where we would normally shout out to our sponsors.
Jessica, we don't have any sponsors yet.
I know, but if we did, this would be the shout out. Hint, hint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast.
And tell all your friends, your family, your neighbors, and everyone else.